Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. If you've been listening the past 2 days, you learned that I took the past 2 months off to care for my dad, Dan, and process his loss after a 7-month battle with cancer. I knew I couldn't come back to the show as if nothing happened, so we decided to do a series on grief. On Monday, we were joined by David Kessler, author of Finding Meaning, The Sixth Stage of Grief. Yesterday, Dr. Deborah Umberson joined us to talk about her book, Death of a Parent, Transition to a New Adult Identity. And today, we are so grateful to be joined by Dr. Mary Frances O'Connor, whose new book was just released this week. It is called The Grieving Body, How the Stress of Loss Can Be an Opportunity for Healing. Dr. O'Connor tells the story of how our psychology, our nervous system, and our immune system are intimately linked, and how our bonds with our loved ones regulate these systems. Grief deregulates our bodies by creating a stress response that negatively affects our cardiovascular, endocrine, and immune systems. Dr. O'Connor writes, quote, "When a loved one dies, it is not just our brain that responds. Our reaction to loss is not only in our thoughts, our emotions, our mind. The response to the death of a loved one is a physiological one as well, reverberating through our body. Bereaved people show increased heart rate, blood pressure, stress hormones, inflammation. Without our spouse or our child or our sibling, or in my case, my dad, the world feels all wrong. Even when we cannot put our finger on what is missing from the situation, our body still reacts to their absence," end quote. She writes that understanding the physical nature of grief can not only help us care for ourselves and our loved ones while grieving, but also provide us with new insights about the profound interconnectedness of mind and body, offering a holistic way to approach and manage the intense stress of coping with loss. Dr. Mary Frances O'Connor is a grief expert, psychologist, neuroscientist, and professor of clinical psychology and psychiatry at the University of Arizona, where she directs the Grief, Loss, and Social Stress Lab. Her research focuses on the physiological impacts of emotion, particularly during grief. Her last book is The Grieving Brain, The Surprising Science of How We Learn from Love and Loss. And her brand new book is The Grieving Body, How the Stress of Loss Can Be an Opportunity for Healing. Hi, Mary Frances. Huge thanks for your important work. And thank you for joining us.
It's so good to be here, Rose, especially in this important time for you.
Well, I have to say, thank you for focusing on how grief affects the body. Mm. Because after my dad passed, I went to Book Passage in Corte Madera. They have an amazing grief section. Mm. I've also read a number of articles on grief, but I haven't seen anything about how grief affects the body. And I've been so conscious of how my body has been greatly affected by sharing the news of my dad's passing on the air and doing these shows. It's almost like this really intense feeling in my chest and stomach. Mm. And so then I have to give credit to our brand new producer, Nina Kissinger. Thank you, Nina, who found your new book. And this is incredible, Mary Frances. Why doesn't this issue, well, we talk about the last 2 days, why grief doesn't get more attention, but the fact that the body has such a profound impact after loss, why doesn't this get more attention?
I think historically, we've really divided up the mind and the body, haven't we? I mean, I think this goes back to Descartes and trying to solve some issues in society by dividing them up. I think, you know, I joke with my students that the body is not aware that psychiatry is one department, neurology is a different department. It's just not how our brain and body work, because they really do work together. So what's interesting is there has actually been medical research on the physiological response in bereavement since the 1960s. But that research is very disconnected from people who are doing the psychology, sort of emotional, even clinical science work with bereavement. So my job in life, it feels, is sometimes to integrate the two, to bring people to the table so that we can see how the mind and body and brain are all working together in this response.
And I love learning about the body. And so I wondered, you have such an amazing background. You write in your book, "I began my own journey by studying psychophysiology in graduate school." You write that I was fascinated by the way our cardiovascular system reacts to the world around us and then recovers, enabling us to experience pain and pleasure and to regulate our emotions. And then after psychophysiology, you studied neuroscience and specifically functional neuroimaging to peek inside the tantalizing black box of 86 billion neurons. And as you write, the brain is not disconnected from the body. So can you talk a bit more about the work that you've done on the body? And then we can talk more about your personal experience with grief.
I think the cardiovascular system, you know, when you think about it, there's not a lot of options for the heart. The heart rate either goes up or down. The blood pressure either goes up or down. And so the stress of loss may not necessarily look very different in terms of its cardiovascular response, except for the fact that it is very intense. But once we look into the brain, we see that when we fall in love with that person who becomes our spouse or the person who becomes our child or our parent, that the brain encodes that relationship. This is my one and only. And the brain, of course, is in charge of the body budget, as Lisa Feldman Barrett likes to say. So it means that when there is a loss, that changes how we're able to function in the world, how we have to relearn what it means to be in the world. And there's great costs then for the body as we try to do that. The body tries to absorb the blow of these waves of grief that keep coming. And fortunately, most of us have a resilient body. It is able to sort of keep us regulated enough while our mind and our brain works out what the heck is going on now.
And this is so important to acknowledge and talk about because I just think about what this experience has done to my brain and my body. Mm-hmm. And there was just no way I could come back on the air and act like everything was normal. Even just walking down the street or going in a store feels different. Yeah. And over the past 2 days, we've been talking about how it is very common for friends, coworkers, even loved ones to say, okay, it's time to move on. It's time to, quote, get back to normal. We also talked about how I'm grateful that I had 5 days of bereavement. Luckily, I had a lot of vacation time so I could take the time off, but that's not available to most people.
Yeah.
And yet we're supposed to just, quote, come back? What does that even mean when our bodies and our brains are trying to process such a profound loss?
I think it's important to remember that we have to deal with this whole new learning curve that we're on. What does it really mean that this person is gone? That's not something that our brain can absorb. In fact, the way our attachment neurobiology works is that there's an implicit belief, I will always be there for you, and you will always be there for me. That's the nature of an attachment relationship, of a close bonded relationship. Well, it turns out that when a loved one dies, your brain doesn't just instantly learn that they're gone. In fact, the whole point of attachment is you don't have to be in my presence for me to believe that you're out there, right? This is how we can all go off to work every day because we know that we'll do everything in our power to come back together again. So then in those unusual, thankfully, circumstances where a loved one dies, our brain takes a long time to learn. This is why, you know, many people describe, I know that the person has died, but it still feels like they're going to walk through the door again or, you know, picks up the phone to call them, even though you know that they're not there. So I think keeping in mind that this is something that takes, you know, it's a learning curve and there is no, I think one of those myths really is that there's some sort of end point, right? That's not really how it works. It's a constant discovery of what life is like now that incorporates intense grief as well as other wonderful emotions as well.
You're reminding me of an email we got yesterday. I want to thank everyone who has sent us heartfelt emails and have called. Some people have included photos of the loved ones they lost. It's just really touching, the stories people are sharing with us about their loved ones. And yesterday someone wrote, "I used to tell myself that my dad was still here and just away at the moment."
Yeah.
And that really hit me, because in the first few days after my dad passed, I thought, well, maybe I'll feel better if I just think he's on vacation. And I thought, Rose, what? And then I would drive to his house and think, maybe he is in the garage listening to his loud music.
Yeah.
And then I would say, well, you know, he's not. It's just, I've never had these experiences before.
It's so intense. I think people are often very shocked by how intense the physical and mental and emotional and spiritual sort of response is when we lose a loved one, when a loved one dies, and that it takes so long to really understand and to become skilled at navigating these really difficult waves that overtake us. I think many people feel, I don't think that they should have to feel validated by this, but I do think that people feel validated that there's, you know, points, places we can point to in the brain, or data we can point to from epidemiology that shows that these reactions really are happening physically to us.
I love that in addition to writing about how loss affects our bodies and our brains and just our overall well-being, you also offer holistic strategies to deal with all of this. What would you say is near the top of your list? I mean, you've dealt with loss. You've shared your personal story in this book. I also just want to let people know we're so lucky to have you on, because your book just came out, The Grieving Body. And thank you for sharing your personal story. But before we talk about that, what would be at the top of your list?
I think my motivation for writing both of these books really is that every day in my lab, my students and I are steeped in doing grief research, in reading grief research in the scientific literature, talking with other investigators. And what became clear to me after 20 years was that this information just wasn't getting into the hands of people who could use it. And I think one of the ways that I try to use science communication is try to explain, how would your grief be different potentially if you knew what I know? And one of the ways I can capture that is my own mom died when I was 26. And, you know, at 26, you just don't have the same life experience as I did when my dad died when I was in my 40s. And by the time I was in my 40s, of course, I knew myself better, but I also understood what is typical, the intensity of grief, how normal that is. And my experience of grief when my own dad died, so I really have been feeling you, Rose, is that these waves of grief came through me. Because I wasn't afraid of them, they would arise and distract me from whatever I was doing. I would often leave the office because I needed to take a moment to have some tears. And I would go for this little walk I describe in The Grieving Brain. I'd go for this little walk. And then by the time I came back to the office, I was feeling soothed and comforted, and I was able to sort of refocus again on whatever I was doing. But that was a very different experience. Because I wasn't afraid of grief, I knew that it would come again and again. And I also knew that it would pass like a wave.
That's so interesting. I think about when people say time heals.
Mm.
I think that is so true. At first, I thought, I'm not sure I believe that in this case.
Mm-hmm.
But over time, you're not crying, at least in my experience, I'm not crying as much. I can walk into his house without crying. I can now kind of smile when I see funny things that are in his house, or something he did or I found.
Yes.
And so that's also been a really interesting experience.
Yeah, I think one of the things that's really important in what you're saying, though, Rose, is interesting. It isn't just time, it's experience.
Oh.
Now, experience takes time, right? But so, you know, it sounds sort of silly, but if you were in a coma for a month, time would have passed, but you wouldn't have changed in the way that you understand your grief. But because you are doing things that bring you in contact with the present reality, painful as that is, because you have the experience of walking into his house, because you allow yourself the positive as well as the negative, right? The bittersweet of seeing things of his or thinking of funny stories of him. It's our courage to experience the reality as it is now that allows our brain to understand the new reality. And by doing so, that helps us to adapt. Our brain is actually very good at learning, and it will figure out how to reorganize our body budget so that we can manage these feelings that keep coming up for a while.
The other thing that's things that have come up in the last two shows are regret, feelings of regret. What if? What else could I have done? What are your thoughts about how the brain processes these questions and emotions?
A friend of mine whose son died by suicide calls these the would've, could've, should've thoughts, which I think many of your listeners might resonate with. And it's so interesting, you know, the brain is able to come up with an infinite number of stories of how things could have gone differently. And this is very normal, very typical early in loss. Our brain does this intrusively when we're trying not to think about it, when we're at a stoplight or get into bed at night, and it comes up with all these scenarios. And what's interesting is for the vast majority of us, as you just said, over time, those recede in frequency and intensity. But one of the things to know is, you know, we call this rumination, right, where these thoughts are going round and round. It doesn't recede for everyone. And one of the things to think about is this hypothesis that some a Dutch grief researchers use, which is the rumination as avoidance. So what I mean by that is if you think about all of these stories, if only I would have called them, if only the doctor, you know, could have run another test, or I should have gotten them to all those stories, each of them end with, and then my loved one would have lived, right? Which sort of reinforces this possibility in your mind. But the reality is that they didn't live. Mm-hmm. And while we can come up with a million stories, it doesn't actually help us deal with the present reality that we're living in. And to some degree, getting caught up in that can then take us out of processing what's really happening.
Right. So maybe acknowledge the feeling, the what ifs, woulda, coulda, shoulda. Mm-hmm. But then, as you say, it's not healthy to stay in that space, but obviously if we're there to acknowledge it.
Yes. I think there's a couple ways to think about it. One is just being aware even that it's happening. Mm. You know, I think learning how our mind works is, you know, when the volume gets turned up like this on our thoughts, even just becoming aware and thinking, is this really how I want my mind spinning right now? And what can I learn to do to shift? For me, I need to walk outside, right? That's the description I had of leaving my office and going outside in the trees. By doing that or texting my sister or whatever it is, I can shift my mental state. Very likely, I'm shifting the network of activity in my brain, and that allows me to just see things with a different perspective. Maybe I get the soothing nature that is somehow meaningful, or I get the soothing comments from my sister by text, and it just shifts my state a little bit that might be more helpful to me.
These are really amazing tips. I'm so glad that you were able to join us today. Dr. Mary Frances O'Connor is out with a brand new book, The Grieving Body: How the Stress of Loss Can Be an Opportunity for Healing. She shares insights into the physiological toll loss takes on our overall well-being and offers strategies for holistic healing. She is also author of The Grieving Brain: The Surprising Science of How We Learn from Love and Loss. If you'd like to join us, if you have a story to share about loss and how it has affected your body and your brain and how you got through it, You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. Or if you're dealing with loss right now and you'd like to share how you're doing and feeling, we'd love to hear from you. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. And let's hear from a caller. Let's go to Michelle in Oakland. Hi, Michelle. Thank you for holding.
Hi, Rose. Hi, doctor. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to read your book as someone who, and part of me, if my voice starts to shake, but
that's normal.
In September, my daughter was born sleeping. Yeah. And fortunately, that happened and my family were doing great. What I found really helpful is just, like you mentioned, that human to human contact, and just frankly, people asking me what my daughter's name is, just holding that space for people who grieve and not feeling weird about it. Because I feel like when you're honest and open with someone who's sharing their grief with you, that's all they need, that space. Something else that I found really helpful for me and my family is when I feel contracted and protracted, I am very aware of that. And so then I end up, making sure to check in on myself. And if I'm feeling, for example, a 10 on my grief, but a 2 in my ability to like handle that grief, I give myself that ability to put self-compassion, right?
Yeah.
Michelle, can I ask, what was your daughter's name?
Mia Madeline.
Aww.
She's gorgeous. Thank you.
Oh, that's beautiful. A beautiful name. Thank you so much for sharing your story, and I'm so sorry that happened. Mary Frances?
Thank you. I appreciate you opening this for us.
Thank you.
I think when we're sitting with someone who's grieving, it's very uncomfortable for us. I will tell you, I've talked to thousands of grieving people, and seeing someone in distress is very difficult. I think it's harder when we think it's our job to cheer them up, because that's not going to happen. And you describe so beautifully that just being there, just allowing whatever grief is happening, and being that external, pacemaker in the moment for the person who is having this wave of grief, that is really what is soothing. I'm not trying to change how you're feeling. I'm going to be here with you until we both know that probably you'll feel different eventually. I'm going to be with you until you feel that way is simply enough, just being connected.
Well, and I love what Michelle said about just being connected to people and sharing stories.
Yeah.
I've found that when people ask about my dad, I'll share something and then they share something that I didn't know.
And isn't that wonderful?
It really is. I feel more connected to friends. And I thought, how did I not know that this friend lost both of her parents in her 30s? Mm-hmm. It's something that just has not come up. I mean, I'm not talking about a best friend, but a friend that, you see once in a while kind of thing. But that's such a monumental event in their life. And you would think that you would have known that.
I think in these moments, we all react differently. And I'm reminded that sometimes people can't quite hear that yet, other people's loss in the midst of their own. But I will say that telling stories about your person who died is one of the most generous things, right? You're now connecting with them in a way that they're already thinking about their loved one. So offering that, your dad did this for me, or people used to tell, my dad was also a professor, and my hometown friends would tell stories of taking a class with him. It was so meaningful to me that he mattered in their life the way he matters in mine too.
Right. It's also been so healing to share, like you said, to share information about my dad. The first few weeks it felt empty just to say, oh, my dad passed.
Yeah.
And it felt so much, my body even felt kind of stronger and more confident when I said my dad's name. I hate speaking in the past tense. It's still so hard, but my dad's name was Dan. He was 74. Mm. He loved to volunteer with the Miracle League. He was a woodworker. Mm. He loved loud music. Now the neighborhood is quiet. It just feels so much more authentic, I guess, than just saying, my dad passed.
It does. There's a wonderful book by a man named Colin Campbell. It's called Finding the Words, and that he really focuses on this. His two children, Ruby and Hart, died as teenagers. And in Finding the Words, he's trying to describe for us, I needed to tell people about my loss. I needed to ask them to say Ruby and Hart's names. Mm. And we're not, we don't always feel like we have permission to do that. And so it gives us permission to talk about them, to ask people to use their names if that's what works for us.
Oh. Well, today we are joined by Dr. Mary Frances O'Connor, whose new book was just released this week. It is called The Grieving Body: How the Stress of Loss Can Be an Opportunity for Healing. Dr. O'Connor's last book is The Grieving Brain: The Surprising Science of How We Learn from Love and Loss. You can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Over the last couple of days, we've been doing shows about grief. I have been off the air for the past 2 months caring for my dad and processing his loss after a 7-month battle with cancer, and doing shows about grief, I think, was the only way that I could come back on the air. And these shows have been just so helpful. And I just want to thank everyone who have shared their amazing stories of loss. You can give us a call if you'd like to join today's conversation with Dr. Mary Frances O'Connor. Her brand new book is called The Grieving Body: How the Stress of Loss Can Be an Opportunity for Healing. She's also the author of The Grieving Brain: The Surprising Science of How We Learn from Love and Loss. You can call us at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. We just got a beautiful email from Scott, who writes, I lost my mom, Sherry, 3 weeks ago today. My impulse is to call her and speak to her. I wish I could hear her voice again. All I have are saved voicemails. I've awakened in the middle of the night crying. I opened a closet full of her clothes and I lost it. My memory of being there and witnessing her passing shook my body to its core, to the point of needing to be held up. I've been feeling regret and have tried not to beat myself up over what I could have done better. We did the best we could. The last few days since we brought Sherry's urn home, I feel better that she's with us and not being kept in the funeral home anymore. We asked for braids of her hair, and the sight and touch of her hair brought tears of happier memories. I feel like part of me is forgetting things about her, so I'm asking family and close friends to tell me what they remember was best about her, but random memories suddenly come to me too. I don't understand it. Scott goes on to write, I'm lucky to be in extended paid leave from work. It's giving me so much time to spend with my sister and myself. I'm writing and speaking to people daily. It's been wonderful. I just miss her so much. Thank you for reading this. Ah, thank you so much, Scott, for this beautiful message. And I'm so sorry about your mom. And thank you for sharing some of your mom, Sherry, with us. This is, what a beautiful email.
What a beautiful email. And what I love is, you know, when this experience, this is typical grief, right? This is how we intensely respond when our loved one is amputated, you know, from our life. And what's so important to me, and what you're doing as well, Rose, is it's not the normal way this happens doesn't get shared a whole lot. And so when it happens to us, we think, wow, I must be crazy, or there must be something wrong with me. So to hear, you know, it affected me so strongly, I had to be held up. That is true for grieving people across time, across history, across cultures. And yet when it happens to us, we think, there must be something wrong with me. So I'm so grateful that he was willing to share this experience with us. We're all richer.
I think doing these shows, we've gotten such an amazing response. It just shows that we need to talk about these issues more, because we have all either been through it or we're going to go through it many times in our lives.
Yeah, that's right. And it's interesting, you know, we've seen some cultural shifts in our sort of present day Western way of grieving that don't always facilitate this natural human response. And it has always been interesting to me to see how other cultures or other expressions of grief across time and history have really pointed out that there needs to be this time set aside, this space set aside for us to understand what's happening and share with each other.
Right. Well, thanks again for that beautiful email, Scott. And I'm so, so sorry for the loss of your mom, Sherry. Let's go to a few callers. Let's go to John in San Francisco. Hi, John. Welcome to the show.
Beautiful show.
Hi. Go ahead, John.
I lost my best friend in the world fairly recently. I'm a military brat, so traveled around a lot. Tough to keep in touch with everybody, but this guy kind of by chance just moved around, and we found ourselves in the same places for about 40 years. And he wasn't close with his family, and so when he passed, I ended up making the arrangements and for the cremation and so forth, and I have his ashes and most of his stuff. And it feels like a part of me died with him, and still a year and so later, I turn around and I'm going to tell Andy about this, or I'm going to tell Andy about that, or what would he think? It's to the point where I almost go and pick up the phone. Like when people say they feel like they have a missing limb, it's kind of like that. And I'm coping, but it hit me harder than I would have even guessed. So there's that.
Thank you for calling, John, and sharing your story about your friend Andy. It's so interesting to hear John say he feels like he has a missing limb. Mary Frances, you write about this in The Grieving Body.
Yeah, it's we think of our, and thank you for sharing that you and Andy were so close, and what his loss has meant to you, because you know, we think of ourselves, we think of our body as ending at the edge of our skin. But in reality, we're realizing that that's not actually true, that we have in relationships the regulators of our own body. So if I come home and I hug my partner, my heart rate decelerates, right? My blood pressure goes down that little bit. And even just now, while I'm on a trip, I can think of him and my heart rate decelerates a little bit, right? That incorporation of this person into your brain, into your body, is physiological. They are physically with us, even when their body is gone in the external world, because we can still rely on the love that we know with them. And so the idea of being able to call on them, being able to, if you turned around to say something to Andy, to know what he would have said in response, that is something we keep with us always. It is physically encoded in our brain and our body. They're with us always.
Well, thank you again for calling in, John. Let's hear next from Roji in San Francisco. Hi, Roji. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Good morning. Good morning, Dr. O'Connor. I lost my wife to ovarian cancer in 2023. And what I'm going through right now is finding meaning in my life. And I've been very grateful to David Kessler, who I've been working with for just about a year.
Wonderful.
And what I've learned, I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry. I just said it's wonderful you've worked with him. Go on.
Yes. And so what I've learned through this is the biggest lesson is to let gratitude and pain coexist with each other. Whereas the pain was sort of, you know, fighting with the gratitude, and sometimes the gratitude sort of eclipsed the pain. But I'm learning to do that, because in the process of finding meaning, I find great peace now in that she lives inside of me, and we both believe in the afterlife. This is a cultural contextual thing from our past lives. And I think what's the greatest thing, that gift that she gave me, was the strength and resolve that she wished for me to continue my life with. Mm-hmm. Because 2 days before she passed away, she said, I want you to live a good life. Mm-hmm. I want to thank you for taking care of me and being the man that I know. Mm-hmm. Continue being that person and be kind and good to others. So that's what I carry forward every mm-hmm. day in my life. Mm-hmm. And I've learned to slow down, be present, and appreciate each and every moment, every breath that I take each and every day. Mm-hmm. And that is my gift right now.
Roji,
so it's difficult. Yeah.
Roji, before you hang up, I am so glad you called in. I got the email you sent us on Tuesday.
Oh, great.
And your wife, Kenji, you both are so beautiful. You sent a photo along with your email. Mm-hmm. I'm so glad you called in because your email touched me so deeply. And I just want to thank you for sharing your beautiful story. I wanted to actually read part of your message today. So I'm just so grateful that you called in and shared your experience. And my dad also sadly lost his life to cancer. And so we're going to do a few shows about cancer next week.
Oh, great. Wonderful. Wonderful. Yeah. Well, Dr. O'Connor, thank you for your presentation so far. I look forward to reading your new book.
Thank you.
And I wanted to also, you know, personally extend to you, Rose, the love from both of us, because Kenji's here. She can hear this conversation. She's with me all the time. And wishing you peace and strength and to continue walking towards the light.
Oh, thank you. I wish the same for you.
Too much time. I want some other people to be able to share today. So I just wanted to share and say thank you very much for doing this series.
Thank you. And I love your idea, Roji, about focusing on how people from different cultural backgrounds express and process differently. And we'll definitely do shows about that.
Mm. Yeah. Just really quickly, last night I was online with Tita. She's a new friend. And we had this incredible discussion about the significance and the meaning of this new lunar year, but also the power of mandalas. And I will forward that to you by email.
Oh, I would love it.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Roji.
Thank you for taking my call.
Bye-bye.
I think it's so wonderful, the idea that grief doesn't have to go away. Grief informs every day. You know, I joke about, you know, when did you get over your wedding day? Right? Like it's not something you get over. You incorporate it into your understanding of the world. And when you can incorporate it along with all the positive experiences as well, it makes us feel very rich. But I would just also say that many people who are listening will not be in that place. They have not found meaning yet. And I just want to honor that as well, that despair is a totally normal response as well. And I can say, you know, let me lend you my hope. I understand that right now nothing feels meaningful. And I can also tell you, you won't always feel that way. And you can't see that right now, but that there will be people with you until you can. And as we heard, you know, it takes time, it takes experience, it takes courage, and people will be there with you.
Thank you for bringing this up, because people have very complicated relationships with their parents, for example.
Yes.
And I think that's really important to acknowledge.
Yes. And if you are finding that time is passing, you're trying to have experiences, and that you're really just not having a change in that frequency and intensity that Rose mentioned, there's nothing wrong with reaching out to someone who has experience, a bereavement counselor, a pastor, a yoga teacher, whoever it is, to say, I'm really struggling and I need to be able to figure out how to live differently. We know there are things that we can do. We can't bring your person back, but we can find ways to help you have a life around the grief you're experiencing.
Mm. Well, Mary Frances, we have so many beautiful emails. Why don't I read a few of them? And then we'd love to hear your thoughts. And again, we're so grateful to be joined this hour by Dr. Mary Frances O'Connor, whose brand new book is just out, The Grieving Body, How the Stress of Loss Can Be an Opportunity for Healing. She's also author of The Grieving Brain. Matthew writes, many people on your show mention they want to call their lost loved one. After my mom passed, I kept up my weekly call session to her. I set aside time, found a place where I could be alone, often outside, and I would, quote, call her. I would tell her about my day or news about relatives. I would ask her how she's doing in her afterlife. I often heard her voice responding. It really helps me to cope. Your caller should just go ahead and call. Put aside 30 minutes, find a private place, and, quote, call. Hold the phone if it helps. Do it every week or day. I learned this from Patti Smith. Their voice that you hear in your mind is just as real as their presence was. Embrace it, seek it, and listen to it. I know this sounds weird, but I've learned so much from the calls to my mom. Sometimes wisdom that my mom had that I had forgotten comes back to me. My mom was always joyous and encouraging, the life of the party. She's still with me. I don't try to dissuade that because of some societal norm. I embrace it. Oh, I love that, Matthew. Mm. Oh my gosh, I called my dad so many times, almost every day. So I love that. Thank you. Pamela writes, losing someone to death is only one way to lose someone. And in our society, it's the only loss that's acknowledged and for which you receive care and sympathy. However, 25 years ago, my husband abruptly left our family and I never saw him again. He was the love of my life. And for 2 years, I retreated into a complete disassociative state and could not even understand what people were saying, what they were concerned about, and how little empathy they had for me and my children. Mm. This grief, this loss is not somehow real in our society, and yet the pain is exactly the same, but no one sees it that way. I've still never completely recovered and have never learned to trust love again. I wish our society would recognize these other forms of loss and help those of us who've lost loved ones in this way as we grieve. Ah, Pamela, thank you. And you're so right. I'm so glad you wrote in today. We're going to get a response from Mary Frances in just a minute after a few more emails. Chris writes, my beloved husband of 35 years died a year ago of ALS. I was his primary caregiver. 6 months after he died, I was diagnosed with stage 4 colon cancer. Mm-hmm. I'm doing okay and received good medical care. Does this happen often to grieving loved ones? Oh my gosh, Chris, I'm so sorry. I always wonder how I feel about it, saying I'm so sorry, but wow. Mary Frances has a very important story to share about being diagnosed with MS. And so she can talk about that in just a minute. Caroline writes, my mother passed away 4 years ago. When she died, I was there when she took her last breath. I washed and dressed her body in preparation for the cremation. The days and months that followed, I felt like there was something that was hidden. I searched her photos, letters, and drawers, but nothing. 2 years later, we found our brother, her mother, and father's first child. They gave him up, and then 10 months later, she had my sister. After the shock of learning this, I went through intense grieving again, like she had died all over again. It was intense. But I also went through all of the sadness that my mother had felt and had been through. My father won't talk about what happened between them, but in the meantime, I've grown close to my brother. I see so many similarities in him that were part of my mother. It's a gift she left behind that kind of feels like somehow she is still here. Ah, thank you so much for sharing that story, Caroline. And then one more listener. I just want to respect everyone and read all of these. Writing my mom's obit brought together many thoughts and feelings about her. I do have one voice message. Cherry wrote this. Ah, thank you for that, Cherry. So many beautiful emails. And John, I hear you about the wave imagery. Years ago, 80-something, a friend talking to me about grief. It's a wave. We can see the wave coming. Prepare to ride or dive under it. That knowing that the grief will come and go was so important in my grief journey. Mary Frances, we have the most amazing listeners.
We really do. They're able to describe these ephemeral feelings and how they've responded. And it's so moving, isn't it? It makes me feel more normal in my own experiences to hear all of this.
Yeah. Well, and there's just so much there.
There is.
maybe you can first respond to Chris, whose beloved husband of 35 years died a year ago of ALS. And then six months after he died, she was diagnosed with stage 4 colon cancer.
Yeah. So what we know from research, from really careful epidemiological research, is that bereavement is a time of increased medical risk. So we know everything from the broken heart phenomenon. So research shows us from very large studies that in the first 3 months, people are almost twice as likely to have a heart attack as they are compared to a married person during that same time. So the loss of a spouse really does show up in the data as causing cardiovascular risk. Similarly, it's something we call all-cause morbidity and mortality. So increased rates of cancer, increased rates of flu and pneumonia. And it's so important to understand this, because if we know that it's a medically risky time, we might do more surveillance, or we might respond to our symptoms more closely and have those medical checkups that we may not have had time to have while we were caregiving for a loved one who was dying. So in my own case, yes, I'm in the grieving body. I write about this other kind of loss of health. In my own case, it was about a year after my mother died that I started to develop symptoms that we later realized were multiple sclerosis. Now, very important to point out, my mom's death didn't cause my multiple sclerosis. It runs in my family and I have other risk factors, but that this stressful time for the body is when some of our predispositions can emerge. And so knowing that, it means that caring for our grieving body is incredibly important, not just our emotional state, but our physical state as well. Going for your, you know, regular annual checkup, getting your teeth clean, going for your mammogram. These are an important aspect of grieving as well.
I also just want to add one more comment for our amazing engineer and radio host at KLW, Kevin, who said, when his dad died, a coworker said, "I don't know what to say." And Kevin wrote, "I smiled and laughed. It was the most honest thing anyone could say."
It is. You know, I think this is the thing. There is no right thing to say. And just being honest with where you are, I will tell you, I say the wrong thing all the time. And I think, why did I say that? And then I say, why did I say that? I'm sure that probably didn't land the way I meant it to. Tell me what would have been a better thing to say. And that can just, it opens up that communication.
We don't have much more time, but I really also want to acknowledge the disparities that you bring up in your book. This is so important. My dad was part of a sheet metal workers union. I am so glad he joined the union back in the day, because he had a pension and Medicare and a great supplement. But while we were dealing with his care, I mean, I just got a bill the other day for something like $180,000 and our payment was $200,000. And I thought, okay, first off, what if he wasn't over 65 and not on Medicare? What if he wasn't part of a union? How would we have dealt with all of this?
We talk about secondary losses, that as we're going through the process of a loved one dying and then their death and the aftermath, it means that there are all these other changes: loss of a co-parent, loss of a breadwinner, increased medical bills, having to move, having to change schools or jobs. And all of those stresses compound what we're already describing as an intensely stressful experience. And what you point out is that we don't often think of it this way, but bereavement is a health disparity. If we know there are different mortality rates in different communities, what it means is that people are, we sometimes describe it as, too many too soon. So we know during COVID, for example, Black children were twice as likely to lose a caregiver, and Native American children were 4 times more likely to lose a caregiver. So it changes the course of their life. And just as you say, not having those resources to buffer that stress experience takes a toll on us then in the moment and going forward.
And we'll definitely do shows about this because it's just the thought of not having the resources is overwhelming. Yeah. The thought of not having the time off to care for my dad is overwhelming. And so we'll definitely do more shows about this. We're getting glad. So many more emails, Mary Frances. Can you leave us with some final thoughts about the grieving body? And I also just want to acknowledge Pamela, who wrote about how losing her husband who left the family, that's also loss. There are just so many versions of loss that need to be acknowledged. And we have about a minute left.
I wanted to say something as well for Pamela. You know, a bonded relationship, and you can't really talk about grief without talking about love, is this implicit, I will always be there for you and you will always be there for me. And when that changes, it doesn't matter why it changes. It can be divorce, estrangement, the empty nest, or it can be death. It means that we don't have something that is as vital to us as food and water, as vital to our body, as vital to our life as food and water. And so we have to find ways to buffer our body, to cope with what is happening, and then to adapt, to find a way to restore life around the grief we're experiencing and with our friends, our family, our neighbors, our loved ones, and maybe occasionally even a professional, maybe even a book author. You might find that we learn through this process, and it changes our experiences of life by understanding death.
Dr. Mary Frances O'Connor is author of the brand new book, The Grieving Body, How the Stress of Loss Can Be an Opportunity for Healing. She is also author of The Grieving Brain. Dr. O'Connor is a grief expert, psychologist, neuroscientist, and professor of clinical psychology and psychiatry at the University of Arizona, where she directs the Grief, Loss, and Social Stress Lab. Mary Frances, I am so glad that you were able to join us today. Huge thanks for your work, and we would love to have you back.
Thank you so much for having me, Rose, and bringing this incredibly important conversation to so many people. Would love
Thank
to come
you.
Back.
We will definitely continue to do these shows. Okay. Thanks to Nina Kissinger for producing today's show, and thanks to Kevin Vance for engineering our show. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.